Welcome one and all, Rack Addicts time, most certainly after hours this week, and most indeedamously, which is definitely not a word, episode 46. Welcome to the interior of my car, and also, slightly to my right, the interior of Pete's car. Just us two today on the side of a roundabout in a certain place, somewhere near the Thames, somewhere in England. Thank you for joining us in our cars, this is very strange. But we're happy to be here, still making podcasts for you, despite not being allowed to be, close to each other or anything. Still working. We're getting through, aren't we, Pete?
Yeah, just about. It gets stranger and stranger every time, doesn't it?
It does, and I'm picking up some interference.
Yeah. What the hell is that?
All of the gremlins coming to you live, but not live this month, week. Is that my phone?
Is that my phone?
Bloody joyriders and interferences.
Well, I'm going to switch my phone up.
Yeah, let me get a quick airplane mode on.
Is that me? Let me put airplane. What? Yeah.
Never had that before.
Airplane mode.
Okay, I think it's gone.
Yeah, I think it's one of us.
One of the phones.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, interesting. From interference, joyriders, much, much later than we usually record. This is going to be an interesting one, slightly strange. I'm staring through my misted window into Pete's eyes in the car next to me. So, yeah, I think it was your idea, wasn't it, Pete, to do a little in-car remote record thing as a backup plan?
Well, we've done them before, but never have we had to do one in, I mean, previous times it was sort of really to test the theory or the whether it would actually work.
Yeah, but if it was a good backup plan.
This time we've actually had to do it in anger.
Yeah, my internet just decided to do 0.4 megabits per second down, which, we can't do Zoom on that. It's not going to happen. So here we are, a couple of little nuggets of news items to jump into in a little bit, but it is weekly update time. Now, Pete, any updates of the weekly? How is the Oculus Quest going?
That's going really well. I'm still just sort of doing my daily round of Death Unchained, which is the gothic archery rescuing the souls from purgatory.
Yes, yeah, the one you told us about last time.
So, yeah, I do at least one round a day, and that's
a nice one.
By the end of that, I'm actually physically quite exhausted because it's
all the standing up, kneeling down, bending around the corner.
Yeah, exactly that, and ducking out the way of the sort of incoming arrows and so forth. But other than that, this week I have been doing something that I've been threatening to do. In fact, my daughter and I have been threatening to do it for quite some time. We decided we were going to clear the loft out.
Ooh, that's a brave move.
Yes.
How many days in?
We only really started yesterday, and we've got I think it's going to take us a couple of weeks. Oof. Because quite literally, there is 30 years of
Has that
stuff.
30 years moved from loft to loft?
Yeah, it's some of the stuff up there has been in. It's literally two lofts previously. So it was packed up, pushed in the loft in the house before the house we're in now.
Yeah, well, of course, the good parts about clearing lofts, as fun as it isn't, any gems, any little nuggets of fun? Or did you know everything that was up there?
Certainly
anyway?
A sort of a real nostalgic wander through my children's childhood, because every time they got to a certain age, the So a childhood accoutrements, the toys and the bits and pieces, were generally packed up and shoved up into the loft and replaced by what was a sort of age appropriate for their time. So I've been struggling to control my daughter's just sort of, look at this, look at that.
Yeah,
just
I'm one of those.
Just and not actually focusing on what we're up there to do. But other than that, also, literally every piece of consumer durable, every product that I've ever bought, I've kept the box for.
How many of those things do you still have and need the box for?
Well, this is what we're finding out, to be really honest. So what we're effectively doing is that we're looking through and going, I've got a box of this. Oh dear, I've no longer got that toaster. or we don't have that microwave anymore, so we're flattening all that and dispose of it.
I was expecting the exciting things like, oh, there's actually this kind of, you know, an old CRT TV, but no, it's toasters.
Well, I mean, I've
of course, now you've got the ultimate toaster.
Yes. Well, I found two pairs of DT100 headphones.
Oh, yeah. What? Actual full headphones?
Yeah.
Just kicking about.
In their original boxes.
Not bad.
And circa 1990, I want to say.
Not bad.
So that's 30 years old. And unfortunately, the foam rubber is...
That's gone all desiccated and horrible.
Turning back into oil or whatever mineral it was originally derived from.
It's like that horrible soft touch coating that KMI like to put on things.
Oh, that turns, and I found a few articles that sort of rubbery sort of grip.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of takes on a weird.
It gets sticky.
Yeah, and I've never worked that out, but it, and I found quite a few sort of mini MP3 players and things of that ilk that are, you know, pick it up and go, oh no,
yeah,
it's all sticky and horrible.
Yeah, that's not a pleasant one.
What else we had? My daughter. I found a couple of. I don't know what they were, a thing quite a few years ago. They were sort of rubbery, spiky balls full of liquid on the end of long, rubbery. I don't know what you describe.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what. I don't think they ever had a name, but I definitely had one.
But I think we bought them for the children. My wife and I spent a weekend in Rome, and we came back and we bought them from some street trader or something like that and presented them to the kids. And then within a week there was an announcement on the news that they were being banned because they weren't safe.
Oh yeah.
So we promptly confiscated the back of the children and stashed them in the loft. So I found one of these and passed it to my daughter, who promptly squeezed it and it exploded. So there was this sort of liquid of dubious origins. Yes, exactly. So that was some of the height of the excitement. But, you know, we're getting there. And one quarter of the loft is literally all the boxes for everything that's in the studio. Mm. So all the synth boxes, all the outboard boxes, all the keyboards, all the modular boxes, everything. And then another side, it's all my videography, all my camera boxes, and so forth. But
at least it's organised.
Yeah, we're going to get there. As I said earlier, we're making headway, and it's something that we've threatened to do for the last 2 or 3 years. Really, it's one of those things. Oh, we must get up there, but unfortunately, in the summer, it's too hot to go up there to really
winter,
be practical.
It's too cold.
Yeah, so we're in the optimum season where it's tolerable.
Nice one. Well, tune in next week for more of Pete's Tales from the Loft, and we'll see what other treasures may be uncovered. My week has actually been, I don't know if it was, have I actually even mentioned vMix yet, but the video production job has recovered like a phoenix. It has risen from the ashes, and I have a more exciting job again. It's brilliant. So we're jumping into some live streaming type stuff, and we now have the task of making a promo for our services that we can chuck around everywhere. So I've been digging into that. You know, you gave me that script of yours, Pete.
Yeah.
I was sort of doing a little script for this video like that. There's something very satisfying about that. That was it. The font's called like Courier,
yes,
or something, and going through and formatting it properly. I didn't print it, which would have been more satisfying, but it is really cool.
So I'm hoping to do another few scenes from the script.
Awesome.
If you're interested.
I am.
So
I think I needed a little bit more. If you did want me to be a voice, I need to learn the characters somewhat before I can try and brew up a voice.
What I need to do is write a little prologue so that you know what's happening.
Yeah, and a little bit more interaction. We'll see how they develop, and I'll be happy to get in there. And actually, if we need more characters, I can pull on a slew of my sister's friends who are big old dramery people, so I'm sure we can get some hands on it.
No, I think it'll be an interesting project. So, I mean, the idea is that it's, you know, it's 50% dialogue and 50% it'll be sort of Foley and audio, but
classic BBC dramatised
formula.
Well,
but with a lot more kind of melodic content, a lot more sort of synthy things going on, sort of... just so that you've got the best of both worlds, but something that's sort of has both aspects, so that there's a sense of there's a certain amount of drama there, but there's also the, you know, hopefully the sort of the melodious parts are as entertaining.
Yeah, you reckon you've got some of your backlog of synthy noodles that you might be able to deploy.
Oh, definitely, and lots of new stuff, especially the stuff out the wave state. The wave state is literally, it's just every patch sounds like some film score or other.
Awesome. Well, you will definitely know on this podcast once some of that may or may not be available on the internet. So that means you're just going to have to keep listening week to week. Sorry about that. You haven't got any choice in the matter. So, to the news. I think I was quite disappointed by this.
Yes, yes.
I teased this last week, didn't I? Because their Novation and Mr. Aphex, Mr. Twin, had put up a bunch of hype-building billboards and things.
Yeah, it's somewhat underwhelming. I spent some time, when I first saw the picture of this new item from Novation, and
new in inverted commas.
Yes, I had a picture of the original Base Station 2 and this AFX unit, and initially I thought, oh no, there are some differences, but I've come to realise with close scrutiny, it's just the way the graphics, the way the sections are laid out. Physically, the control surface is almost identical.
Yeah, well, the killer was when you realised current base station owners can update to the Aphex firmware.
So it really is. So how do you switch to the Aphex mode, which I haven't really...
No idea, really. But in sort of previously, there was an update for the base station 2 where you could play a patch per key, and that was the Aphex mode. They just decided to make a synth that graphically represented that cool... To be fair, that is a really cool feature. But it's... I was actually expecting something different.
Yeah, I thought there'd be a bit more to it. It
probably looks cool. I haven't really seen it up close or anything.
Well, it's just mainly all black with some white pinstriping, rather than the sort of having the sort of touches of blue that you get on the base station, as you did with the. I mean, it's got a similar leverage.
Livery.
A similar livery to the Base Station 1 in some respects, which I had one, and it was circa, I want to say, 1993, so 27 years ago.
I did see one of the comments on the, I think this was in the ModCaf chat, ModCaf Facebook group, where we suspect it's because Mr. Aphex Twin has bought too many tanks, because apparently he's been buying tanks, so he just needs a bit more cash.
Tanks in respect to tanks with, you know, battle tanks.
As far as I know, so I don't really know too much about the issue, but that's certainly the discussion in the ModCaf world.
Well, whatever turns you on, I suppose.
Yeah, whatever you want to chuck your money at. Disappointing. Potentially, maybe somebody will do something interesting and new with it. We'll find out. But slightly more exciting and aesthetically definitely cool, the Moog Music Clarivox Centennial. So, Performance Theremin, which is, I guess if it's called Centennial, it must be, you know, 100th anniversary of the Theremin or something around about now.
It was certainly sort of between the war, or wars, rather, to speak. So,
100-year anniversary of the invention by Leon Theremin. Limited edition, this bad boy. I love the stand. It looks like a proper vintage telescope stand. Like tripod leggy thing. Lots of wood. I'm about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly distinctive. Yeah. Let's put it that way. Because, as I say, the Moog Theremins, not the cheapest of items for something that has... I want to say just one knob on it normally. But this has got a lot more control, a lot more going on in there.
Yeah, certainly for the very, very few serious theremin players, probably quite an enticing one. I mean, to be honest, just as a statement piece, I think it's fantastic. Any whisperings on a price? I couldn't find anything.
$1,500.
Oh, that's worse than I expected, but, you know.
Yes,
it
so
makes sense, I guess.
But it has all sorts of things. It's got MIDI. It's got. I mean, I've sort of had a meeting again about how many we should be purchasing from the shop, and we came to a relatively small figure. We thought it was going to be, you know, an acquired taste possibly, or, you know, if you've got that, it's
almost
a lot of
certainly.
Money for something that's that specialised.
Yeah, I do appreciate that you've got kind of the Moog digital and analog sides on tap, so you can go for both, which is quite nice.
Well, it looks like quite a quality thing with all the wood.
Oh, well, it's Moog, isn't it? It will be.
And
it
the design and so forth. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to actually see one of these in the flesh, but I'm not quite sure when we're going to be seeing them. But
only if we send one overseas and we have to test it first.
Well, the word was that we possibly wouldn't see them until the new year.
Quite a while, but I suppose it's not too much of a delay.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would imagine we will see one. I don't know because I know that there is a specification that you've got to have certain Moog items on display if you're selling them. Mm. So I wonder if it would encompass this particular.
Yeah, that reminds me. I do need to send that Moog 1 back for repair. It's broken again in exactly the same way. Anyway, those are a couple of teensy tiny little newsworthy items for you. I do tend to scour the websites. One thing actually I like to do, which I suppose it's not really a news website, but is actually just to go on to Modular Grid, obviously the modular enthusiasts mecca, and just go on to the sort of the full modules listing, sort by like newest first, and occasionally you get a whispering of something really new. For example, I'm doing that right now. I can see we've got a new Happy Nerding Through Zero Linear FM oscillator, which would be pretty cool. Often you get the DIY things that people have just put up so they can actually have it in their, you know, in their rack just to have a look at. And Tumbra got new LED looking tuner, new alternative panels. But if you're a modular head, that's actually something I would advise doing, since you're probably already on Modular Grid anyway. You might as well if you're on the website.
I find, and I've said this many times, that sometimes I really don't pick up on bits and pieces. I mean, there's the obvious things that you know, the big announcements, the stuff that's piping through the store, and we're made to be made aware of them because there's an impending likelihood that they're going to be for sale with us. But there was an item that I picked up on this week that I'm quite interested in. I came to sort of do a bit more research and realised it had been around for about 3 years.
Oh, yeah, what's that?
And this is the OTO BAM.
Oh, OTO machines. They're really cool looking.
Yes, and I only really found out from a customer that I was talking to on the phone. Mm. He'd phoned up to discuss the Empress pedal,
nice.
And we were discussing reverbs. And he went into the quite detailed about it, and I sort of, was caught out slightly. You know, you're expected to know everything when these people phone up. But he was telling me about how wonderful that particular device was, and how it was specially sort of primed to set up to emulate some of the classic reverbs of the sort of late 70s and the early 80s and so forth. And I've done a bit more research and thinking I might yes, exactly.
Well, there's a few. There's the BIM, the BOOM and the BAM.
Yes.
I think BAM, is BOOM the compressor distortion type?
Wow. Yeah, I believe that there is two others. I've only focused on the BAM so far.
Yeah, so it's reverb, there's a delay, and then the compressor distortory type box.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure about the other two, and I'm more sort of, if I'm going to get hardware in the respect of compressors, I'd rather have a real compressor, not some sort of emulation that's been running, or an algorithm that's running through a process. So I'm sure it's very good, but if you're going to go that the whole hog, you might as well have something that's possibly got valves and transformers and or whatever's in there.
Yeah, something juicy.
Yes, exactly. The delay may be interesting, but certainly the reverb, and I've heard, I think the YouTube channel is called Once Upon a Synth.
Yeah, that guy. I've come across him a couple
and
of times.
And once I started doing research on the BAM, I realised that he'd done quite a selection of various different analog synths through that particular effects processor.
Nice one. I know London Modular swears by them.
Yeah, and so trouble is, what I really should do is sort of dispose of something to, and get the funds and then purchase this. But unfortunately, what will happen is I'll just purchase this and so forth. I really have got to control my spending. But there you have it. That's my sickness.
The gear. The gear acquisition syndrome.
The gas.
As always. Well, from gear and gas to a slightly more intellectual place, I believe. One that Luke is our navigation man. Luke is going to take us to Luke's Spacey Bit.
Hello listeners, today's Spacey Bit comes to you live from the past, as I was once again unable to join my co-hosts at the appointed time and space this week. Today we have an update from the Voyager mission. Launched in 1977, this mission is one of those rare space projects that brings a little warmth to my heart. Voyager 1 and 2 were initially sent to investigate Jupiter and Saturn, but have since delivered so much more in their long and eventful lives. On February the 14th, 1990, the Voyager 1 probe sent back a peerless image of the Earth from over 6 billion kilometers away, beyond the orbit of Saturn and after the conclusion of its primary mission. Suspended in the sunbeam, the Earth appears only as a pale blue dot. In fact, I actually have a printout of it hanging in my house. It's an image that's very close to me. Beyond that, the Voyager probes continue to function every day, although their capacity for taking measurements can vary based on how well NASA believes the probes are doing. For instance, some systems have shut down to increase longevity, while others have failed through the passage of time and entropy. Nonetheless, 2012 saw Voyager 1 breach the outer bounds of the heliosphere, the protective magnetic shell generated by the Sun within which our solar system resides, and entered interstellar space. This is when something interesting was observed. Interstellar space is thicker than we thought. Space around us may be a vacuum, but it is not entirely empty per se. It is in fact full of tiny particles, mostly the solar wind of our own star, pushing out away from the center of our solar system. We measure the plasma density of this space by measuring the electrons observed per cubic meter. Scientists observed in 2013 that space outside the heliosphere had a plasma density of approximately 0.055 electrons per cubic meter, substantially more than were thought to be possible by some existing theories. The figure was thought to be more like 0.002 electrons per cubic meter, implying that there should be much less stuff out there beyond the heliosphere. Now, scientists from the University of Iowa have revealed similar results from Voyager 2's own journey through the threshold of the heliosphere, the outermost edge being called the heliopause. A figure of 0.039 electrons per cubic meter was recorded in 2019, confirming the findings of Voyager 1. This infers that the heliosphere provides a buffer between interstellar space and the solar system and whatever makes up the interstellar medium. The new research out of Iowa suggests that the interstellar medium is actually getting thicker as the twin probes move further and further away from the solar system. With the probes reading densities of 0.13 electrons per meter cubed, it is possible the interstellar particles are clustering around the heliosphere as the Sun charges through the galaxy on its own orbit, essentially breaking on the magnetic field of the heliosphere like a wave. When trying to envisage this, I thought of a ball planing through a medium of water, pushing aside thick waves and droplets of water as the ball forces its way through the otherwise relatively peaceful particles. Another possible explanation takes the strong magnetic field measured by Voyager 2 into account. Interstellar magnetic field lines might become stronger as they interact with the leading edge of the heliosphere, effectively draping across it. Scientists say this could cause an electromagnetic ion cyclotron instability that depletes plasma from these draping regions, leaving it to bunch up in areas of high concentration. Reality could indeed be a mixture of both phenomena. We may never find out without sending more probes and sending them in different directions to those taken by the Voyager pair, so to me this is incredibly exciting. We have looked beyond this distance with Hubble, with other telescopes, but we've never probed this distance before. The Voyager twins have made humanity an interstellar species after a fashion. I mean, what can be more exciting than that? We've finally left our own protective bubble, our solar system, and actually tasted and tested the interstellar medium. In any case, more data is needed to understand what the Voyagers have discovered and to better chart the interactions between the edge of the heliosphere and the interstellar medium itself. There is so much to say about the Voyager mission, so I encourage you to read up on them. In particular, check out the creation of the Golden Records, our furtive hello to any interstellar life that may eventually find either of the distant Voyager craft long after we lose our ability to communicate with them. I will end with a brief quote from Carl Sagan, an excerpt from the pale blue dot that was made observing the picture taken in 1990. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known. That concludes this week's Spacey Bit. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the segment. Tune in next week for more space news on Rackalix After Hours. But for now, I shall pass you back through to our colleagues Peter and Ben, who have driven some way to provide you with Rackalix After Hours due to the magic of the internet sometimes giving and sometimes taking away. In the meantime, I wish you well, stay safe out there, and you'll hear from us next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Luke. Excellent. Pre-recorded this week. But as always, great to have our man on the ground. Who's definitely not on the ground, because there isn't much ground in space, but it's always good to be educated, enlightened, and just develop more interest in the world beyond ours. Thank you. That brings us round, I guess, to the YouTube recommendations. And, Pete, you're gonna have to go. I'm so stuck now. I've really got nothing left.
Oh dear. We're gonna have to come up with a new segment.
Well, we did say it was gonna be general media, but all I do is sit on YouTube all day. It's not going very well. I mean I have been watching a bit of The Hacksmith, but I don't think that's really worthy of mention, to be honest. What can we grab?
Right, well, I'm going to dip in, and I've had to switch off aeroplane mode, so mm-hmm. if there's any strange buzzings or so forth, everyone will know what it is. But so again, dipping in, let's see what we have in my still copious selection.
You will be the last to run out.
As I say, I think we really need to develop a new section, as everyone else seems to have exhausted their.
Well, you can keep doing this one. We'll just, everybody else will transition away.
Yeah, maybe it's a case that we just feature one, and just if you've got one, just do that, and then maybe I'll do a bit more. Hello, that noise.
There it is.
It's my 4G. Signal is thing. Let me get it up, and then I'll switch it back off aeroplane mode, because it's there. It's definitely there, isn't it? Phone it. Why is this doing? Why is this happening?
I don't know the science of it.
No, neither do I. So I was going to. No, I'm not going to say that one. That's too close to home.
Okay, I've got a very quick one.
Yeah, go on.
I'm just going to check that searching it works. So if you search duet for French horn and chair, let's see if this one comes up. I'm not going to say anything about it. Yep. So the first result, if you search duet for French horn and chair, it should be a video by Aitor Marino Martinez, 5.3 million views, 16 seconds. It'll give you a good laugh.
Yeah, so this week I'm going to recommend Cell Dweller.
Mm-hmm.
Cell Dweller is a US musical artist. How would you describe Cell Dweller?
Dubsteppy and industrially, this electronic. It's loud and, you know, fantastic hairdo.
Yeah, I mean, he does, apart from his own stuff, I think he does quite a lot of film soundtrack stuff.
Ooh, I'll have to check some of those out, find out what they are.
I mean, he talks about it on the videos. I can't. I think there might have been some stuff for, not necessarily directly for the films, because they also get other artists to do the different musical tracks for the promos.
Oh, yeah.
So the potentially sometimes a film promo will have a different soundtrack to the actual film itself. So, I mean, I'm sure he's done some stuff from Marvel Studios in the last over the last few years. But yeah, anyway, he's got his own stuff that he produces in his own back catalogue. But the reason I was suggesting it was that a few years ago he did a studio tour, and it really did fuel my lust for modular synth, because he's got a phenomenal setup.
He's got that proper kind of the curved type case, doesn't he?
And it was, as soon as I saw it, I just thought, I must have. And hence why the moths were born.
Yeah.
They were sort of, they're not quite as big as his were custom built for him. But that's where my sort of extreme modular lust was fueled or fired up or however you want to describe it. So, yeah, so basically the channel is just called Cell Dweller.
Yeah, he's got some good, like, tutorial stuff, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he goes into it. He certainly goes into bits and pieces. And I don't know, is that him doing some VR there? I don't know what. There's all sorts of stuff going on, basically.
Nice one. Well, if that seems like your kind of scene in terms of music, or indeed you're a modular head like we are, even though I currently own a MIDI interface, and that's it. Check out Cell Dweller.
Did you even get rid of your oscillator?
Everything's gone.
Everything's gone. What?
Apart from that one. Actually, I do have two Bastl Castles and the Subharmonicon and the Digitac left.
Ah, I see.
And I don't, at the moment, I don't see those going anywhere. I need to detox from the music retail world, and then we'll see how it goes.
Very, very sensible, to be honest. So you've got, I have to commend your willpower in that respect.
To what? Ditch it all or actually keep some of it?
Well, well, both. The fact that you can just shed it like that, and then you know, I suppose at any time when the world takes you, you could just take it up again. Or
I hope there is a time, and I hope it's not in the too distant future.
Well, as
least.
Long as the 20-year gap that I had to leave, well,
oh yeah,
whilst having children and with small fingers that can go in places that they should go, and generally just
don't want to let them near the plus or the minus 12.
Spent a lot of time just working in the box inside computers, yeah. and with plugins and software and so forth before I sprung forth again and started spending copious amounts of money on hardware.
We'll see how it goes. Thank you everybody for listening to Rack Addict After Hours. I hope it's your favourite podcast. It's certainly mine. And do tune in next week. Thank you very much.